Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. Happy New Year, everybody. This is my first broadcast of the new year, and it should be an interesting new year for us. It begins, surely, a little bit depressingly for many of us, for those of us in the blue states or who voted blue in November 2004. But the prospect of four more years of George Bush, I don't know. Either it can drive you down into the holes and leave you depressed, or it can lead you more willing to fight. And now that we have a very clear one-party state, president, both houses of Congress, the Supreme Court, the media largely in the Republican camps, it relies more on people like me to come and give you the inside scoop on what's going on in Washington. The government is the most secretive in my lifetime, and the worst government in my lifetime, and I don't think there's a coincidence of that. I think that a bad government often wants to hide its mistakes. And so I am rededicated to bringing you the inside scoop as much as I can. And I got to tell you, we're growing a little bit. I'm proud to say that starting this month, the Inside Scoop will be televised. If you live in Fairfax County, Virginia, outside of Washington, D.C., and you get Cox Cable, you'll be able to get the Inside Scoop on television. I'll give you information on that when it comes about. And hopefully in another month or two, I'll be able to put those televised programs right there on the Internet so those of you can at least see me as well as listen to me. I guess I'll have to stop wearing jeans and a T-shirt to the office. But I do want to talk today. It is Tuesday, and that makes it Debate Tuesday. I always invite someone on Tuesday to come on air and disagree with me. And one of my favorite guests is going to come on in just a few minutes. He's Tom Robbins, state chair of the Utah College Republican Party. But I want to talk about Bush's second term agenda. What can we expect over the next 4 years? And whether it's ending Social Security or reducing ethics laws or drilling in the last American wilderness, there are a lot of Bush plans that I would think that people who voted for him might be surprised that that's actually what they voted for. I'll be debating that with Tom a little bit later on in the hour. Before I get there, though, I want to talk about two members of Congress who died this week, sort of an obituary, but two very, very important people who otherwise might go unnoticed. They're Shirley Chisholm and Robert Matsui. Now, Congresswoman Shirley Chisholm, I didn't know personally, but I know her history. She is the first black woman elected to Congress, and indeed the first black woman to run for the presidency of the United States for a major party. She ran in 1972 for president and the primary, the Democratic primary. Now, Shirley Chisholm is someone who I have a lot of respect for because she's someone who, as her own slogan put it, could not be outbossed. She was someone who was living in Brooklyn, was a school teacher, and was amazed at all the extreme poverty of kids in the 1960s in Brooklyn, and decided to do something about it, first being elected to New York Assembly and then to the United States Congress, where she served seven terms. And I think that her legacy is that she would not want to be known, so I guess I should apologize to her, even as she's no longer with us. She would not want to be known as the first black woman in Congress because she said that to be known that way is simply to emphasize the racism and sexism of our day. She instead would like to be known as someone who looked out for children, particularly for poor children. And that's how I'd like to remember her. The other person who died I did know personally, Congressman Bob Matsui of California. I was surprised, very surprised, to hear of his sudden death. He wasn't very sick. I had seen him many times working in Congress. And Bob Matsui was also someone who cared for the poor. And to even say those words today shows you how different our Congress is from the Congress of the 1970s when Bob Matsui first got his start. To even say today, a politician who cares for the poor, boy, that's enough to get you kicked out of office. The poor aren't supposed to have representation. Poor people aren't supposed to have congressmen looking out for their interests. No way. Today's Congress definitely looks out for the middle class. They claim to look out for the middle class when generally they pad the pockets of the rich. But caring for the poor? No way. And Bob Matsui did that. Now, you know, he and I would have disagreed on some things. He was, for example, against Clinton's welfare reform proposal because he thought it would hurt the poor. In that way, I guess he was a true liberal. The other thing that Bob Matsui, that always has to be remembered about him, is that he grew up in his formative years in an internment camp. In an internment camp for Japanese Americans. Now, of course, the young child, Bob Matsui, had done nothing wrong, nothing criminal. But the United States, of course, in the 1940s, rounded up tens of thousands of Japanese Americans and put them in prison for no other reason but that they were Japanese Americans. And that's a stain that is forever on our history. And in fact, it's something that hasn't been equaled until, well, George Bush put a couple of American citizens in prison and didn't give them a trial or any charges. In the 60 years between 1944 and 2004, there are no other examples that I know of taking American citizens and putting them in jail and without charging them with a crime and not allowing them a lawyer or a chance to get out. But Bob Matsui took that early part of his life, and instead of having rancor against the United States, he saw it as a way to improve America. And I remember him working very hard to get reparations for the Japanese Americans that were wrongly interned. And he successfully did so. And he did so by building a coalition among Democrats and fair-minded Republicans that understood that to divide us into minorities is really to divide us. To say, oh, well, that's Japanese Americans and the rest of us shouldn't care about that. Or to say that the majority of America is white and not black, or the majority of America is Christian and not Jewish, or the majority of America is straight and not gay. To do that really tries to isolate minorities. But what I think the Democratic Party has understood, that if you combine Asians and blacks and Latinos and gay people and people who aren't fundamentalist Christians, and you combine us all together, we are a great majority in this nation. And one of the things that Bob Matsui understood is the power of coalitions. He never forgot, for example, how the Congressional Black Caucus was out supporting the right of Asian Americans to get reparations for the internment camps, even though there have been no reparations for slavery. And he remembered the way that gay advocates like Barney Frank very much supported him. And he also came and supported equal civil rights for all, again, of all peoples. And I think that Bob Matsui represents, I guess, that old-time liberal that I have a lot of respect for, someone who understood that America is for everyone. I guess if there's one thing that Shirley Chisholm and Bob Matsui has in common, it's the idea that no American of any race, color, religion, no American should be kept out of the political process. And I myself will very much mourn these two politicians, particularly Bob Matsui, who I knew personally. Let me get on now to the topic at hand, which is Bush's second term agenda, because there are a lot of things in that agenda that might surprise a lot of Americans. There is Bush's plan to end Social Security. Now, some may say I'm making that a little strong. I'm sure Tom Robbins will say that in just a minute. But as we read today in the Washington Post, Bush plans to cut benefits by up to 50% over the years. For my generation, it's going to be about a quarter. For Tom's generation, about 30%. And it's going to keep increasing, cutting our benefits. Is that what Americans voted for? Because I don't remember Bush mentioning it in the campaign. There's also, of course, Bush's plan to keep you from suing, to make sure that corporations can harm you however they want to harm you and keep you from fighting back. That's important because when a corporation kills you accidentally or makes a product that they know to be unsafe that harms you, Well, you see, when you sue them, that harms the corporation. And we can't have that. So we've got to protect corporations against consumers who sue them for unsafe products. Of course, there's the agenda of packing the courts with right-wing judges. We expect the Republicans to really push that agenda very hard, despite the fact that more than 100 Clinton judges were not allowed to have an up or down vote in the Senate. The fact that Democrats are restraining about a dozen from the same up or down vote is seen as some horrific crime. Again, consistency has never been very strong in this Congress or this administration. There's also the weakening of House ethics rules. Now, I want to talk a little bit about that, definitely, because the idea was to allow Tom DeLay, even if he's indicted for a number of felonies relating to his illegal gerrymander of the Texas congressional district, something, by the way, that the Democrats would have won 3 seats in the current Congress if it were not for Tom DeLay's illegal actions. He may be indicted for using corporate money to do this, and originally the Republicans meant to overrule this ethics provision. Now it seems, at least according to today's Washington Post, they're backing down on some, but not all. I have to congratulate some Republicans for that, people like Chris Shays, who stood up against their leadership and said, you know what, maybe we shouldn't go down as the party of no ethics. But they're not backing down on all. No, indeed, there's an ethics provision that will remain overturned. And that is that they want to make sure that no Republican can be accused of ethics violations unless the majority of Republicans agree. Now, for 30 years, the rule was on the House Ethics Committee that if this committee was split, and it is split down the middle between Democrats and Republicans, if they're split, if they got an equal vote, you could still explore the allegation. And that way, you couldn't stop an allegation for partisan purposes. Well, the Republicans want to make sure that they can never be investigated. And just like the president can never be investigated, they want to make sure that their own can never be investigated. And so they're getting rid of the Republican head of the Ethics Committee who allowed complaints to go forward against Tom DeLay. Joel Heffley is being shown the door, replaced with Lamar Smith, someone much more likely to do what Tom DeLay says. And they're going to try to change the provisions. In fact, I expect that to happen today or tomorrow, to try to change the provisions to make sure that if the Republicans say they can't be investigated, that it doesn't matter what the evidence is, they will not be investigated. It goes on and on. It's reducing protections against corporate fraud, giving the Medal of Freedom to people like George Tenet and Don Rumsfeld, I guess for serving their country so well, and, I don't know, destroying the last American wilderness in Alaska, allowing illegal immigrants to stay and undercut American jobs, but as long as they work for the slave labor, you know, the slave wages that employers give them, we're not going to punish those employers. There's so much of Bush's second-term agenda that I wonder whether Americans really realized they were voting for this agenda. But, hey, it is Debate Tuesday, and there is another side, and I'm very glad to invite the other side on the program. My guest today is my most frequent guest, and I think my favorite guest on the Inside Scoop. His name is Tom Robbins. He's the state chair of the Utah College Republicans. And I like Tom because even though his politics are sorely misguided, he can disagree without being disagreeable. And I'm honored to have him repeatedly on the show to try to show me where I'm wrong about all of this. And he's armed with his facts and figures. And in fact, he's fresh from the inauguration of the new Republican governor of Utah. Utah is the reddest state, the most Republican state in the union. And so since I'm in D.C. in the bluest part of the United States, I think it's fair that we bring it on. So let me invite to the program Tom Robbins. Welcome again to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mark. It's fun to be here in the new year to talk about the exciting times that lie ahead with the Bush administration, another 4 years, and for America, and what's going to be happening in the political scene. The first thing I just wanted to say with Congressman Matt Tsui,
yeah.
A few years ago as I came to Washington, D.C. for the first time as a very wide-eyed intern for the House Resource Committee, had the opportunity to go with my fellow interns to hear Congressman Matt Tsui speak, who at the time was the ranking member of the Social Security.
Yeah, he would have been a big
ranking minority member, I meant to say.
He would have battled very strongly against the Bush Social Security plan, no question about it.
Yeah, and I remember him speaking, and that's actually one of my favorite memories from that summer interning, was hearing him speak, and then, I don't know, I guess it's the Inside Scoop in me that doesn't let me be quiet when I hear something, or I was able to ask him some questions and engage him in a lively debate in front of the other interns. That's actually one of my favorite memories, and he was very cordial about it, and I talked to him a little bit about it afterwards. And I know I've posted on the blog before kind of that interchange of ideas that we had on Social Security, because it kind of spurred some thought and some things. So he was someone who obviously served his country very well, who has a lifetime of distinguished service, who tried as hard as I think every congressman does to represent the interests of their district. And oftentimes it's seen that congressmen are always in front of the camera or get the photo op opportunities, but it's not seen the late hours, the long time spent away from family, or the often arduous travel back and forth from the district to D.C. And I think he served his country well, and I think he should be commended for a lifetime.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate that. I know that you disagree with Congressman Matsui on Social Security, and we're going to talk about Social Security. But I think you can agree with me that Bob Matsui was a nice guy, and he was someone you could disagree with who would not be disagreeable and would actually take the time to argue with an intern, which some members of Congress in both parties wouldn't do. And he was just a real nice guy, and I think you can agree with me on that.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, unfortunately, throughout the I don't know exactly when it started, where it could be pinpointed, but people look at government service. Oftentimes when I talk to people and they ask me what I want to do, and that's to be involved politically, it doesn't matter who they are or what party they represent. They usually cringe a little bit, and that's probably happened to you before as well, Mark. And why do you want to be involved with that? But the bottom line is that good people need to be involved on both sides in government. Young people need to realize that civil service is something honorable. One of the other things I got to do when I was an intern, that first time back in Washington, D.C., was hear Colin Powell speak. And the majority of his speech was just about that government service can be honorable. It's not the easiest route. You're not going to get the most money from it. You'd probably do better in the private sector. But it's something that good Americans need to take a hard look at and do. But unfortunately, there's just so many people have a bad taste in their mouth about it.
Well, Tom, it's nice to begin the new year by agreeing with you. I couldn't agree with you more. I also have a lot of respect for Colin Powell and for government service. I have been there, and I can tell you that no one there is making the kind of money they could make in the private sector. There are a few members of Congress in both parties who use their government service to get out and make a lot of money as lobbyists. I have nothing but disrespect for them. But that's the minority. The great majority of them are there because they want to make a difference. They want to do some good. It's in both parties. And, well, it's nice to begin the new year at least with where we can agree, and that is that it is honorable to try to make a difference. That's what I'm doing. That's what Tom's doing. And that, my friends, is what you can do by keeping involved, by listening into programs like this and other programs, by voting, by registering, and by maybe running for Congress yourself one day. Let me give out the phone numbers. It's 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. When we come back, Tom and I may be less agreeable because we're going to start delving into some of these things that I mentioned, Social Security, the ethics rules. And if you want to call in and you want to challenge Tom or challenge me, you're always welcome to do so. The toll-free number, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can post on the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
Have you got your ticket yet? You're simply nobody if you don't have a seat at the exclusive lunch being held for Bush's inauguration, where you can break bread with George himself. You might find the bread a bit pricey, though, since the ticket goes for $250,000. But that's not as bad as it sounds, for not only do you get to shoot the breeze with George, but Dick Cheney will also be there, so you get a twofer. George likes the small talk, but with Dick, you can talk some serious business, like maybe about that little regulatory change you need the Bushites to make for your company. Oh, that's another benefit you get. The $250,000 underwriter ticket comes with a promise that, quote, your corporation will be recognized on all printed materials. So your bean counters back at headquarters can just write off the quarter mill as an advertising expense, totally deductible from the corporate income tax. Don't you love the loopholes? And hey, you don't get loopholes unless you're sitting at the table with the big boys. It's called pay to play. What a great country. But wait, you say, I don't have $250,000. Not to worry. You can buy the sponsor package for only $100,000. See, there's room for everyone at Bush's table. Well, for that, you don't actually get to lunch with him, but you would get to attend one of three elegant dinners featuring appearances by George and Dick. Sure, some of you liberal-type spoil sports will say it's unseemly to be throwing a week-long $40 million inaugural extravaganza for fat cats while America has 130,000 troops stuck in Bush's bloody debacle in Iraq. But the Bushites have thought of that, too. There's to be a commander-in-chief's ball, and military personnel get a free ticket to it. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, that's mighty small comfort to the soldiers in faraway Iraq, who, I imagine, would rather have George finally provide some armor for their vehicles than a ticket to his inaugural ball.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac Man.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former congressional attorney Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. And today is Tuesday, so I'm debating with the state chair of the Utah College Republican, that is Tom Robbins, and we're talking about Bush's second term agenda. And I don't know if this is what you voted for. You know, reducing Social Security benefits, watering down ethics standards, giving the Medal of Freedom to people like George Tenet and Don Rumsfeld. Is this what America voted for? Let me start with Social Security, Tom. We've got a question. We now know Bush has kept secret for all this time what he's going to do. We now know he's going to cut benefits. He finally came clean today, front page Washington Post. The idea is to cut Social Security benefits. The idea is that they want to keep you up with today's living standards, but not the living standards of the future. For example, if you became elderly if you started work in 1940 and you just retired today in 2005, you would get the living standards of 1940. At a time when, you know, 40% of American homes didn't have indoor plumbing. That's the same idea he wants to do today. Instead of the traditional, the way it's been done for 70 years, where the benefits go up as wages go up, he wants to just simply take benefits in accordance with inflation. And that way, tomorrow's seniors will not get as much money, will not get the same standard of living as the people of the future. They'll get the standard of living of today. And at the end of the day, it's about money. My benefits are going to be cut about a quarter. Your benefits cut about 30%. Children born today, their benefits are going to be cut about 50%. Now he comes clean. And my question for you, Tom, is if this is Bush's plan, why didn't he announce it before the election?
Well, the typical thing is, you know, looking at what we're going to talk about today, how it's presented from the left or on your show, it's the typical Democrat way to do it, which is ending Social Security. Which is the scare tactic that the Democratic Party or the liberals of America have always relied on to scare seniors and not be able to keep them informed. The real problem is that if we do nothing, then there will be nothing for myself or for you or for other young listeners who are invested in the system, because it'll collapse on itself as the pyramid scheme grows.
Well, that's not true. That's your own scare tactic. We know that the trust fund, for example, is solvent until 2052. That's quite a long time away. I mean, it only collapses if the government stops funding its own bonds. Well, you know, the government can stop paying treasury bills to Saudi Arabia or China, I guess, as well. But there's a commitment in that Social Security Trust Fund that's the same commitment as any of T-bills. And Bill Clinton, at the time of the massive surplus that only Bill Clinton was able to do in the last 35 years, he put half the budget surplus into Social Security and saved that system for another 50 years. So I guess I have to argue, Tom, it's your party that's doing a scare tactic here.
Well, not absolutely. What happens is that the age at which people are expected to live, which we've seen in this last century, goes up and goes up every single generation. So as we're going to see, people who are expected to live to a certain age at this point, 20, 30 years from now, we'll have to tack on a couple of years of that. And as the people and the amount of people grow who are involved in that system to be able to support it, is that if we don't act now and we don't initiate some reforms, President Bush, I think he knows that he doesn't have all the answers. This is a complicated issue with lots of very well-funded special interest groups. Alan Simpson, I got to meet him once when I was younger, and he made the joke that the AARP will have stories about the elderly eating out of garbage cans, but the garbage cans that they use at their corporate headquarters are paved with gold. It's an organization that, you know, is bound together in a lot of ways by people who appreciate travel benefits and don't even know what their membership fees are actually going to, which is carrying out the Democratic Party's party line on Social Security.
Well, first of all, the AARP is no stooge to the Democratic Party. As you recall, they supported Bush's massive help the drug companies prescription bill plan that the Democratic Party opposed. But
well, there's also Democrats who crossed over the aisle and who signed that.
There are, in fact.
Something needs to be done. But President Bush met yesterday with all the newly elected members of the U.S. Senate and United States House in the White House. And he went over some of his agendas, and all he asked of the people that were there, who was everyone from Senator John Thurman from South Dakota to Barack Obama from Illinois, he said, Social Security, all I ask is that you keep an open mind. And what happens is that when people on the left throw out bombs such as they're going to end Social Security, and that's acceptable, which is completely untrue, then the dialogue gets muddied, people get scared, and they don't want to make the right decisions, even though they might be the difficult.
You know, Tom, you talked about AARP complaining that seniors were eating out of garbage cans. When Social Security began in the 1930s, seniors were eating out of garbage cans. They were the poorest sector of American society. Today, they're one of the wealthiest. Actually, it's children, in fact, are poorer than current seniors. And the Social Security system has done them just fine. And a lot of them don't want it changed. And my question, I mean, you know, it seems to me that the idea of these private accounts as this magic solution for everything, it says that if you put money away for your retirement in the stock market, that's somehow going to save Social Security. You know, you already have the right. No one's stopping you from putting money away in the stock market. In fact, you can do it tax-free with an IRA or a Roth IRA or 401ks or all kinds of retirement plans that Democrats and Republicans support on a bipartisan nature. The nature of Social Security is not, oh, you can put money in the stock market. Because once you do that and you end these – because remember, Bush is cutting benefits. He's cutting benefits and saying, well, we hope you make it up in the stock market. It seems to me that the whole purpose of Social Security is to allow some minimum payment. If you work hard all your years, you know that you won't die and be eating out of garbage cans. And I guess my question for you is, why didn't George Bush announce his plan to cut Social Security benefits prior to the election? Why is he surprising it on us now? I mean, it's got to be political, right? Tom, you can agree with me on that.
Well, President Bush said that they're going to take a hard look at Social Security. There's nothing that has been finalized. There will be a large debate in which many special interests, along with citizens who are interested in this issue, will be able to air their concerns, and there will be many committee hearings, and nothing will be signed into law until it has been debated thoroughly on both sides, and the special interest groups have gone to the talking head shows and have made their cases.
You know, you call it special interest groups. These are people looking out for poor and seniors in America. I mean, these aren't exactly big corporations who are trying to make a lot of money like the drug companies. Special interest groups. These are a bunch of Americans getting together.
The people who run the AARP are not poor, Mark.
No, but the
people who are involved with running the AARP,
they're not rich either.
Are not at the level of the people that they claim to represent in any way, shape, or form. Senator Alan Simpson, who is, you know, elderly himself, would often just chuckle because he you would sit down with people with the AARP, we'd be talking about all these poor people, but yet they were taking the membership dues and living off the hog, some of them.
Well, look, you know, there are all kinds of I mean, look, I don't know the specifics of whether the AARP is, you know, there are unions that do the same thing, but the heart of it is that when you have a group of citizens who come together to defend their interests, whether it's elderly or pro-choice or pro-life or guns or anything else, that to me is very different from the big corporate fat cats who are sitting there trying literally to line their own pockets, Exxon and Merck and the drug companies. This AARP is a group that's trying to represent the elderly. And, you know, if the elderly don't like the way the AARP is treating them, they can join some other interest group. But the heart
the
of it is...
The problem with the AARP, Mark, for example, my old mother is a member of the AARP.
Okay.
She doesn't know what they represent. She likes the fact that she gets travel benefits and that she gets discounted car insurance.
Okay.
And that she gets roadside assistance. Have her car towed. Or
there you go.
Her battery and
there, apparently they're providing her benefits, and apparently she hasn't listened to her own son. Tom, haven't you told her, don't be a part of this liberal interest group?
But that's but people are a part of that. They're giving money not because that they're interested in what their opinions are in Congress or who they oppose politically.
My point, Tom, is you're attacking the messenger, but the message is clear. George Bush wants to cut Social Security benefits, and he didn't tell us that before the election. And that, I think you're going to have to agree with me, was done entirely for political reasons, because he knew that if he went before the election and said, I'm going to cut Social Security benefits, I don't think he would have won the states of Florida and Ohio, and we'd have a different president right now.
We're going to see how it all pans out. There's going to be a very lively debate. And in the end, something is going to have to be done to make sure that it's solvent. Part of the problem with Social Security, and I don't know if you agree with me, is you have people like Ted Turner, who's a multi-billionaire, who's been paying into Social Security all his life, and he'll get a check every month. The same person who is only, for whatever reason, on a fixed income of, say, $1,000 a month.
See, I think that's a trick, Tom. What you're trying to do is you're trying to say, well, if people who are middle class or wealthy don't get Social Security, we'll cut them out. And then what that does is it starts undercutting the political benefits, because FDR, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, understood long ago that if you only provide benefits to poor people, then other Americans, selfish, middle class, and rich Americans are going to say, I don't want this benefit. The fact that Social Security helps all Americans keeps the political base there so that we do help those that are less well off. And as you well know, Tom, you know, Ted Turner does not get as much back concerning what he put in as someone who, waitress that's been working three jobs struggling to make a living. So it does perform that benefit for the poor, and that's one thing it's very good with. Let me get to some of the calls because they've been holding for a while. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP. 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Tom Roberts.
This is Ed from New York.
Hi, Ed.
And I've got a question for you, Mark. You said that the Washington Post said something about cutting benefits. Can you tell us a little bit more about what, other than cutting benefits, how they're going to cut benefits?
Sure.
What benefits are allegedly cut? I haven't seen that in my newspaper. And then I have some questions for Tom about the AARP. But
okay.
I'd like first to get some information if I could.
Sure, no problem. Here's the Bush plan. And of course, before the election, Bush never stated this plan. And in fact, even after the election, his first press conference, he simply said, I'm remaining open to discuss things. But now it has come out what the Bush plan is. Social Security, right now, and the way it's always been done since the 1930s, it gives benefits back based on increased wage levels. In other words, it looks at the average wages paid across America, and it gives you benefits based on those wages. So if you put in 1940 and $1,940, and you put in $1,950, $1,950, and $1,960, $70, $80, $90, $2,000, and then you retire in 2005, it pays you benefits based on a 2005 standard, okay? What George Bush would have you do is roll it back to the standard when you put in the money. In other words, if you put money in 1940, it will give you a standard of living of 1940. So Bush's argument is, well, you should only get the standard of living as when you paid in. Now, of course, standard of living in 1940 was not near as good as it is today. As I said, some 40% of Americans in 1940 didn't even have indoor plumbing. So he wants to give it basically an inflation adjustment only, instead of the traditional measure, which is wages. And wages increase faster than inflation over the course of many years in this country. And the upshot of it is that it will slowly decrease benefits as time goes on. For today's seniors, it'll decrease about 1%. In 10 years, about 10%. In 20 years, about 20%. And in 50 years, it will actually cut benefits almost half. So that's the plan, is to lower the increase in Social Security benefits from the increase in wage levels to increase in inflation levels. And I hope I haven't been too technical there.
I understand. And now I want to ask Tom a question,
go
if
ahead.
I can. Social Security, I get the AARP magazine, and I know that it says in the magazine, like Tom's mother, I'm sure, reads, that Social Security supports a lot of seniors, and it is their sole method of income. The question I want to ask Tom is, what does he intend? What do the Republicans intend to do with welfare rolls if Social Security is cut and these people now are put back on welfare?
It's a good question. Thank you for your call, Ed. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, the thing is that Social Security needs to be looked at so that future generations, such as myself and my generation, can get those benefits. No one is talking about, and I'd have to read the article that Mark's talking about. I haven't seen it, to see as far as the cutting of benefits, as far as what you paid in and adjusting that to what the actual wage was or the cost of living of what you actually put in when you put it in. But as far as I know, they're not looking at an immediate cut of benefits, but they're looking at giving people different options as far as what they'll be able to do with that money, whether they give that to the federal government or whether people will be trusted to be smart enough to invest that.
No, Tom, they're looking at cutting the benefits over time. You're right. It's not immediate. It's like 1% this year, and it grows pretty much about 1% a year, a little bit less than that. But they are looking at cutting benefits over time. And Ed's question is, back in the 1930s, when we didn't have these benefits, seniors were very poor. When you cut these benefits now, aren't you going to end up just adding to the welfare rolls and still spending the same amount of money?
I don't have the numbers, and I don't know exactly if any cuts are going to be made or modifications or different things that are restructured to make Social Security solvent. So I just don't know.
Well, let me ask you this: you haven't read the details of the plan, but you've heard me describe it. Is this a plan that you think Republicans and Americans should support? I know the Democrats are fighting this tooth and nail. It may not happen because I think the Democrats are going to fight very hard, and they might get some moderate Republicans on their side. What's your personal view, Tom? Do you support the slowly cutting benefits over time plan?
I support, as a person who has worked and has put money into the system, the ability for me to at some point get that money out. And my generation, quite frankly, any poll that you look at, doesn't have that confidence right now in the federal government and doesn't have the belief that we'll actually see the Social Security benefits which we pay into, which is sad.
It is sad. I would bet under the Clinton era they had a lot more confidence. I think that George Bush has been talking down Americans' confidence. It's kind of like the way he talked up the war in Iraq. No one really thought Saddam Hussein was a major threat.
Actually, Mark, Gallup poll came out today with a new poll that was on being televised. It talked about when Clinton was reelected and when Bush is now reelected, now that there's a new Congress being sworn in, they did a poll and said, what is your confidence in the United States Congress? And it's actually the exact same percent, 48%.
Well, maybe it's because not enough Americans realize what their Congress is doing. I do know that Bill Clinton gave half the surplus to protect Social Security, and that's why it is solvent today, unless George Bush touches it. Let me go to the phones, though. We've got people been holding. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins.
Hey, gentlemen, Dave from California.
Hi, Dave.
I too, will very much miss Robert Matsui, who was my congressman, and I was on the campaign staff for Shirley Chisholm some years ago. But
really? Good for you.
A couple of questions for Tom. When George Bush, incidentally, I don't think you've really addressed the point that Mark is making, that why didn't he address what he planned for Social Security prior to the election, but when he says, and he often does, we all know Social Security is in trouble, he's failing to mention something. I suppose you know what it is. If not, I'll clarify it. The fact that he and others have borrowed several $1 trillion out of the Social Security surplus, mandated by law to repay it, but he gave all that money to his very rich buddies. He really doesn't have the ability, without raising taxes, to put it back in. So he just simply says, we all know Social Security is in trouble, and I find that ever so slightly misleading.
It's kind of like someone who robs the bank and says, hey, look, the bank doesn't have any money. It needs money. Tom, how do you address the fact that George Bush broke into the lockbox that Al Gore wanted to protect, took the money out of Social Security, and is now complaining like Chicken Little, oh, no, there's not enough money in Social Security?
My question is, it's interesting what Dave says. He goes, he gave all the money to his rich friends. And, Mark, you often talk about how corporations are, you know, so self-centered and this and that. Are there any corporations in America that you like, any major corporations that you like or you think are trying to do good?
Yes, but I think you're changing the topic, Tom. I'll tell you what. I'll answer your question after you answer Dave's, okay? What about the fact – Dave asked two questions. One I've asked you before, and that is, why didn't George Bush announce his Social Security plan before the election so that everyone knew what it was? Let's start there. I mean, you have to agree with me that he made a political decision. He knew it was politically unpopular, and he decided, I'm not going to talk about this till after the election.
I don't know the specifics about his cut. I haven't seen the Washington Post article or what's being discussed. I know, though, that there will be exactly what he said in the campaign, that there will be a look at privatization accounts, that there will be an overhaul of Social Security, that he will not be afraid to take on special interest groups, or he will not be afraid to talk to both parties in Congress to be able to work out a solution.
But he didn't mention the cuts.
Everybody be open-minded as far as what will be done.
And this
is something that's going to be addressed. You know how many presidents and members of Congress beat the drums of Social Security? This needs to be changed. This needs to be looked at. Who's actually had the determination and the will to get it done?
Well, Bill Clinton.
George Bush.
Bill Clinton. What did he do? He devoted half the nation's surplus to protecting Social Security.
If the healthcare plan would have been put into play like they wanted to, we would have been the debt up into our ears.
Actually, we wouldn't be having so many Americans without health insurance today. But let me ask you Dave's second question. His second question was, George Bush broke into the lockbox that Al Gore wanted to protect, that was a lot of people made fun of, and took the money for Social Security and gave it to tax cuts for the very rich, to no-bid contracts for Halliburton, to corporations like the Medicare bill, all the drug companies. Since George Bush broke into the Social Security lockbox and took all the money, isn't it a little bit, disingenuous?
Hypocritical.
You're mad, like you just mentioned that. Well, he broke into some lockbox to give Medicare and, to give drugs to seniors.
Well, not to give drugs to seniors.
We're talking about how seniors need Social Security. On the other side, where seniors are crying for help because of drug prices and the inability that they have to be able to get the drugs that they're prescribed to them at a cost that's sufficient. Something is done bipartisanly and is passed through the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate after much debate, and you criticize that. So it's kind of like
Hold on, Tom. That bill does not aid seniors very much. What it does is aid drug companies. The fact that payments went out to drug companies last year and seniors may see some benefits in 2006 tells you a lot about that drug bill. And also, I would not call that a bipartisan bill at all. This is the bill. Remember, Tom DeLay got in trouble because he offered to bribe a member of Congress, Nick Smith of Michigan. He offered to give $100,000 to his son's campaign if Nick Smith would change his vote. That's one of the ethics violations I want to talk with you about that Tom DeLay got in trouble for. The fact that he had to bribe a member of Congress because they lost the vote to switch the vote in the middle of the night doesn't tell me it's a very bipartisan bill.
But it's just funny how you attack on one side. We need to protect seniors and Social Security. But then on the flip side, you're saying, well, even though they wanted this drug benefit, and
because it doesn't provide the drug benefit
cards and the discount prescription medication cards that are going to be available, let's give them a chance to work out. Let's just let them suffer, and then we'll continue to bicker about this and debate it.
Tom,
simply
calling something a drug benefit does not make it a drug benefit. It was an awful bill. It doesn't help much for seniors. And actually, I think AARP was wrong about supporting that one. Dave, one last comment, then I got to go to another caller.
Well, just in general, Tom, can you honestly reflect on this? Do you think that the driving force, the Bush administration, is he in the business of representing the average citizen, or is he driven to represent the very wealthiest of Americans? What's your honest reflection on that?
My honest opinion is that President George Bush has a good heart, and that he wants what's best for America. And he personally strives to ensure that when he's done in 4 years, that America will be in a better place and that the citizens of America will continue to prosper. I think it's really weird for every time I've been on, you know, I talk with liberals or the show, oh, it's corporations and stuff. Corporations are the ones that hire Americans, that give them jobs. There's wonderful corporations out there who give great benefits to their employees.
Terrific, Tom. Then let them win and get their money from selling products and not from my taxpayer dollars. If I'm going to send any welfare at all, I'd rather do it on saving somebody eating out of a dumpster than helping to give some golden parachute to some CEO making hundreds of millions of dollars. If corporations want to make money, fine, but stop getting my taxpayer money.
I want you to name three major American corporations that you think are good, that do treat their employees well, or that do amazing.
Costco.
Or are they all demonized?
They're fine corporations that don't take – Dave mentioned Costco. One I really like is Google. I understand they treat their employees very well, and they've made billions doing so. I think Apple Computer does a good job. There are a number of corporations I like. My problem is when corporations are taking my taxpayer dollars. If they want to earn a profit, great. Let them earn a profit. But you don't need my taxpayer dollars to do it. And that means Halliburton and energy companies and drug companies, you're just going to have to earn it on your own and not with my tax dollars. Thanks very much for your call,
Dave.
Good
to have you back, guys.
I appreciate it. Caller, we're going to let you go ahead and ask your question. Then we're going to take a commercial break if you'll stay on. What's your name? Where are you from?
This is Brian from Jersey.
Hey, Brian from New Jersey. I want you to stay on. We have to go to commercial break soon, but I'm going to let you ask your question. We're going to give Tom the whole time to think about it, and then you'll stay on the air and be able to give some follow-ups, all right?
Tom basically saying that he doesn't like paying into Social Security because he'd like to use that money to play in the stock market with it rather than be paying taxes like a good citizen should be doing, so that if he does happen to live past that certain age, he can get that benefit, but he, you know, doesn't care about the other people, I guess.
I think that is what he's saying, but you know what? Let's go to commercial break, and then, Tom, you'll have every opportunity to defend yourself, I promise. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop and your calls at 877-57-SCOOP right after this.
Good game, Mike.
Thanks. Hey, by the way, how was the doctor the other day?
Good, but my cholesterol's 200. It's a little high.
Yeah, I'm around 760.
760? You're kidding me.
Pretty impressive, huh?
No, not impressive. Not impressive at all. What are you on, some sort of butter diet?
Yeah, you know, I figured at 760, getting a loan on the new car should be no problem.
Loan? What are you talking about, man? You're not going to live long enough to pay back a loan.
There's physical health, and then there's financial health. With Score Power from Equifax, you'll get your credit report, credit score, and you'll learn how your credit decisions can affect your score, all for just $14.95. It's the first step toward healthy credit, and a score of 760 is pretty healthy. So check out Score Power at Equifax.com or call 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Yeah, I figure I can get up to around 790 by the end of the year, you know, if I'm lucky.
Look, a little advice.
Yeah?
Eat a vegetable, a smoothie, something, man.
Get the power. Score Power at Equifax.com.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me.
Guacamole.
You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard
heard the words credit card and thought, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get Score Power from Equifax.com. Score Power gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get Score Power at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score Power.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, former Congressional Attorney Mark Levine, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. We're discussing Bush's second term agenda, and as it's Tuesday, I've invited someone with whom I disagree. A very nice guy, I should say, although I still think he's dead wrong on this. His name is Tom Robbins. He's state chair of the Utah College Republican Party, and I have a caller on the line, Brian from New Jersey, who just asked him a question, and that is, why don't you go ahead and ask your question again, Brian.
Basically, what I had heard is that he thinks that we shouldn't really need to pay into Social Security and we should just be able to take that money and gamble it away on the stock market, whereas if we were to have done that, we'd actually be making less.
I mean, Tom, isn't that your position, that basically instead of you shouldn't pay any money into Social Security, you should be able to just take it all, invest it yourself, and provide for your own retirement?
There's a point at which I believe that you have to ask yourself a fundamental question. Historically, who is better at making financial decisions? An American, a person who is educated, who wants to research things and take ownership, or at least partial ownership, of their decisions, or the federal government, where no matter who's in charge, accountability can be difficult, fraud and waste can run rampant, and the ability to get answers, clarity, or to make good decisions can oftentimes be compromised.
Well, Tom, let's understand your world here, okay? Because this, I think, is your vision. You've got a woman, and let's say she's got three jobs. She's working as a waitress at night, a secretary during the day. She's trying to raise her children. You would have her look at, 10 or 20 or 50 different mutual funds provided to her with prospectuses. You expect her to understand the details, know when she's not getting tricked or screwed over because, you know, the SEC isn't watching some of these things very carefully. And she's to pick which plan that she wants out of the thousands that are offered while, somewhere between raising her children and holding down her two jobs. And if she picks wrong, she'll just die of poverty. I mean, that's really your plan. You expect everyone to have this perfect information, no matter how poor, no matter how uneducated. That's what you want, right, Tom?
I trust people to, when they have a stake, a personal stake in anything, that they have a more heightened sense of involvement and that they are more invested in the outcome.
Have you been to Las Vegas, Tom? Have you been to Vegas? Have you seen the people gamble away their life's earnings? I mean, do you really think that everyone – I think some people would have the comfort of knowing that, yes, they can invest for their retirement. That's great. But at the end of the day, there's some small sum that they know that no matter what they do, they will always have a minimum standard of living to live for the rest of their lives. I think people have comfort in that.
I believe that people should have the option, that they should be able to make that decision at some point.
Oh, well, now we're coming somewhere.
To take some part and say, well, this is mandatory investment. I don't think we're going to be able to jump from everybody having forced pay into the system.
So Social Security should be optional?
No, it should be partially where you have to – if that's your beef that you're saying, well, people need an X amount, well, at least give me part of my money to be able to invest, because I'll get a higher return.
Well, I don't know that you will, but you already have.
Mark, the bottom line is that just becomes an ideological thing, is that Republicans generally feel that people, when empowered to make decisions, can do a good job, whereas liberals say, nope, the federal government, the big brother, will take care of you. We're the all-knowing, powerful, great eye source of knowledge and wisdom, and we're the ones that can make the best decision for you. Don't pamper yourself about the details. If people want all to be taken care of...
It seems to me that the best way to look at the Republican plan is to look at America 100 years ago, because in the 1890s, we didn't have any of these protections. We had panics. We had Great Depression. We had people that were being asked to invest in Ponzi schemes, not those backed by the United States government, but by individuals who stole all their money, you know, and that was how we lived. That was the purest capitalist system that I know of, America in the 1880s, 90s, 100, you know, 1910s. That's when you had the sweatshops and you didn't have those pesky child labor laws. It seems to me that Republicans really are trying to undo the New Deal of the 1930s and want to bring us back. Listen, I think some capitalism is absolutely necessary. I also think some socialism is absolutely necessary. I don't support pure capitalism where, you know, if you make it, you live, and if you don't, you die. Is that the society that you really think we should go toward, Tom?
Mark, we don't live in a society where that's going to happen.
But we did 100 years ago. Is that your goal?
Yeah, we also had slavery, and for thank heavens, the first Republican president, Abraham Lincoln, freed the slaves.
Yeah, last great thing a Republican did. No, I take that back. Teddy Roosevelt was a pretty good guy.
Yeah, well, look, Mark, the bottom line is that I think moving in the direction to offering some people who want it the opportunity to be able to invest and see what happens is a good idea.
To let people opt out of the system.
That's just what we're going to have to do.
And then if they make a mistake and they invested in Enron and they end up dirt poor, would you allow them to have welfare benefits, or would you say, sorry, you made a wrong investment, you're just going to have to die now? What would you do with them?
As far as the technicalities of how much people would be investing,
tough question.
There'd probably be a diversification clause in it, meaning that people couldn't throw all their eggs into one basket.
Yeah,
there'd have to be some kind of diversification of the fund that they're able to do. I mean, obviously,
and then of course you have all these corporations.
The problem is that the dialogue about this is good, but Democrats throw out the bomb of we're ending all Social Security and nobody wants to talk about it.
It sounds to me like you want to, at least for some people, and I like the fact that at least you think it should be optional. By the way, that's not in the Bush plan, that it should be optional. I like the fact that you think that some people should be allowed to keep being in Social Security. That's at least, for me, a benefit over the Bush plan. But I think in your direction, you're basically saying people fend for yourselves completely and forget the fact that we do invest. We do have IRAs. We do have 401ks. We have all ways to fend for ourselves. You want to take that last bit of protection that people have and throw it away. And, I don't agree. Brian, last comment.
Yeah, I personally don't have any interest in the stock market. I would have no idea what I'm doing. And, yeah, I think the government, he said Big Brother. I don't think that has anything to do with Big Brother. If you want to talk about that, then there's many other subjects. But they do certain things better than others, and I can't invest in myself because I don't know. So, no, I'd very much like to have the government run my Social Security for me. And
right.
If I die before I'm eligible, then take my money and give it to the next person, because that's what a free society is all about. You pay taxes so that if you do live to that certain age, cool. Otherwise, give it to somebody else.
And, Brian, most of your money you can invest for yourself. We're only talking about a small percentage
right,
anyway.
And I mean, that you are obviously an educated person. You're listening to talk radio. You're calling in. You're selling yourself way too short, buddy. You're saying that you don't have the ability to figure out where to invest or to make simple
not the ability. I don't care. If it's just being
like
done
that.
Fine,
I mean,
by my
government,
I don't care to
take
do
care
it.
Of that for you?
Well, now you're both talking at once. I think what Brian's saying, and our time's about up, and I want to get to other subjects, but I think what he's saying is, you can invest what you want with all your excess money, but it seems to me that there should be some minimum where you know if you gamble wrong, you still don't end up dying poor in the streets. And it's just that minimum safety net that I don't understand why Republicans want to get rid of that last minimum safety net that Americans have. Brian, thanks very much for your call.
Thanks.
Tom, we only got a few minutes left. We've basically spent the entire time on Social Security, which happens. So
you
I want to ask.
That was a lot with us. So I wanted to get to Anwar personally. That's one of my favorites.
Okay, let's talk briefly about that. I want to ask you actually briefly about each of these questions. So Anwar, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, you support oil drilling in the last wilderness in America, right?
Mark, let me just tell you this. Like I said earlier, I interned on the U.S. House Committee on Resources, and believe me, I had to spend just hours poring over this information. ANWR, all it is, it's politics. The Democrats who don't support drilling in ANWR do so not based on solid scientific fact or knowledge, but do so just because it's a political football. And the reason why I know this is because the chairman of the Resource Committee at the time, Congressman Hansen, was sick and tired of all the bickering going on, and he offered any member, Democrat, who opposed it, the ability to go to Anwar to see what he has seen personally with his own eyes, which is a frozen tundra.
Right. And because the Democrats did not want to go to the Alaskan wilderness, they have to be wrong on Anwar.
The bottom line is if they can spill the rhetoric, they can say their interesting talking points. But the bottom line, anyone who has been there and seen it with their own eyes realizes that the propaganda that they get in the mail from the Sierra Club and all these other organizations that show these picturesque wilderness.
I'm sure that the last wilderness in America is not the most prime territory because all the prime territory has been taken up. I understand that. I mean, I don't know whether you're going to drill in Yellowstone next or not. I did want to ask you real quickly about some of these other points that I brought up and try to get, because we only have a few minutes left, try to get some yes or no answers. Republicans for several years refused to allow up and down votes on more than 100 Clinton judges. The Democrats are refusing to allow up and down votes on about 10. Do you think up and down votes should be allowed for the Republican judges and not for the Democratic judges? Or are you going to be consistent and support one or the other?
Down votes, and I'm not exactly sure we're getting that number of 100.
It's more than 100.
Research that, because I think that's totally bogus. But up and down votes, yes or no, is the job of the United States Senate.
Okay, then can you agree with me, if that's the job of the United States Senate, that in addition to all the Bush judges that have not gotten up and down votes should be given to the Senate, that all the Clinton judges that were not given up and down votes should be renominated by Bush so that in a grand bipartisan fashion, all the judges that have not been given up and down votes should be granted, and then I guarantee you the Democrats will support this plan. Do you support that plan, Tom?
I don't have the specifics on the quote-unquote a Clinton nominee.
No, but you, since you agree that you want up and down votes, shouldn't we allow all the judges in, let's say, the past 10 years that were not given an up and down vote should be renominated by Bush in a bipartisan fashion, and that way both presidents could get their up and down votes? Is that fair?
That would actually be an interesting proposal.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that. Let me ask you one more thing, because we only got a minute left, and that's about the House Ethics Plan. I am glad to see that the Republicans back down on some of the most extreme ideas of letting indicted felons run the House, as Tom DeLay might soon be. But one of the rules that has not gotten a lot of press that they want to change is they believe that you have to have a majority of Republicans on the committee say there's an ethics violation before it goes to be investigated. The old rule is if there's an equal number of Republicans and Democrats that say it should be, you know, the Democrats say it should be investigated, Republicans say it shouldn't, or vice versa, then you go ahead and investigate if there's a split vote. Do you agree with this plan to say that no Republican could be investigated unless the Republicans want him to be investigated?
I'm always very curious when Democrats bring up ethics because they only bring it up when it works for them.
Do you agree that this should be weakened? That's just. Do you think that the congressional ethics laws should be weakened in this way?
No, I think it is a good idea that if there's 10 on each side, that if they're both voting and it's a tie, that they should be investigated.
Good. I'm glad you agree with me, and I hope you'll continue to work in the Republican Party to oppose this watering down that I expect to happen over the next couple of days.
I'm sure that you didn't defend Bill Clinton when he lied to a grand jury and purged himself and.
I don't defend.
That
no.
Would do anything that if I was talking to.
Our time's just about up, Tom. So you got 10 seconds. Make your point.
I was talking to my uncle who worked for Maryland.